From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton. Others of us will be heeding the lessons of our next guest, Catherine May, in her book, Wintering, The Power of Rest and Retreat During Difficult Times. As she explains her term for these periods of dislocation, wintering, she says that we need to see life as thriving in the warm months and shutting down in the cold. Now, that's not necessarily fully appropriate here in Park City, but some creatures, such as bees and dormice, as well as plants and trees, use their summers to prepare for winter. Crucially, they don't ignore the fact that it's going to happen, and they integrate it into their daily existence. What if, May asked herself, instead of feeling so much shame around failing during these times of, you know, holidays and not seeing family, instead of hustling so hard to keep up with appearances, we gave ourselves permission to fall through the cracks and rest. Imagine it, a deep, full season of rest and retreat. Catherine May, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Great to have you here on air with us here in Park City. And I guess we should put a caveat to this, that this town comes alive in the winter. there's bustling bees and skiing, but I think the concept really applies well to us, and it's super appropriate for Thanksgiving. So why'd you use the term wintering?
Well, I suppose it's drawing an analogy between the times in deep winter when everything doesn't seem alive anymore. You know, we see the trees dropping their leaves, we, you know, see the birds migrating away from us. We might notice small animals disappearing as they hibernate. And we tend to see that period of time as a time when everything's frozen, when nothing's happening. But actually, I think that it's a time when we're doing really, really vital work. So that's where I got the term from. Also, I'm a big winter lover, so I think I just wanted to talk about my adoration of the winter.
And there's definitely a sense of appreciation in your writing for winter, and we will echo that here, because many of us spend almost the entire fall just getting ready for the winter, too. So, but it's super appropriate and serendipitous, in fact, that you really, the book really has relevancy to now and to COVID and this sense of shelter in places and lockdowns and not seeing family. And just even in my own family, we're having guilt about, can we get together? Should we get together? How do we get together? Mm. And maybe it's just okay if not to.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're making decisions that we've never really had to make before, certainly not in our lifetime. My mum lives in another country, so I won't be seeing her for Christmas this year. And that's so hard. I think we felt that realization dawn on us really slowly over the course of the year. And we're all making such huge sacrifices this year. It's such a year for dealing with massive change, massive fear, and also like loads of guilt too, I think, for maybe those of us who have skipped the worst of it, but we're watching our friends and family suffer too. There's so many horrible emotions going around this year.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Catherine May. Her new book is called Wintering, The Power of Rest and Retreat in Difficult Times. It is so hard for us to do this isolation thing, whether you call it quarantining or isolating or just hunkering down. I noticed the other night we happened to be near the grocery store, my husband and I, and I said, oh, we have to go to the grocery store. We have to go to the grocery store. I need, you know, whatever it was. And then we had this moment where we said, we named about three things that we really needed. It was celery, peanut butter, and bubbly water. And then we decided, we don't really, you know, these are things we don't necessarily need. We can put it all off a week. And, you know, whether you're drawing a parallel to the grocery store or simply leaving the house or staying home and embracing what we're doing at home, it's just a very curious study of how we're so accustomed to being socialized, isn't it?
Yeah, wow, we're learning a lot about ourselves this year, aren't we? I mean, I'm quite an enthusiastic introvert generally, but I've found this year really tough. You know, I've realised how much I rely on those casual conversations that happen when you meet somebody at the school gate and maybe go for a cup of coffee afterwards, or you bump into somebody, you know, while you're out. And, you know, there's been a lack of gossip this year. I think the world has felt really stale, really slow. But I do think there's been some positives for this year. I mean, I've noticed amongst my friends a glut of people making really big life changes, you know, setting up new businesses, cutting down on workload, moving house, maybe having children. And I do think that there's something about this period of time that's opened up for us that loads of us have actually found quite helpful at the same time as it being scary. So it's a big mix of emotions, which is exactly what I was writing about in my book. You know, the idea that wintering is always painful and awful, but it's also the crucible of change.
So well said. When you talk about it, it reminds me actually of childbirth, where you say, do not deny the pain because the pain is there. You need to sort of embrace it and go into it, and then you'll be able to sort of control your own response to it. And that's what I feel like you're talking about with wintering.
That's a lovely analogy, actually. And actually, you know, I had an epidural when I gave birth, and they cut the drug off when you're doing the final stage, don't they? Because you need to feel that pain in order to be able to do the full process. Yeah, I mean, it's really hard going out there and being the person that says to everyone, you've got to feel your feelings at the moment. Those awful, awful feelings are things that we need to walk with and acknowledge. But they're so instructive. You know, if we spend a lifetime flinching away from those times when everything seems awful, then we don't avoid wintering. We don't avoid the bad stuff. We just defer it. And it often gets worse and worse until perhaps our bodies force us into acknowledging what's happening, or our minds.
In fact, here we have so many Olympians who are training, and rest is a core component of that, that ability to recover and to take a moment to allow their body to just winter, in a sense. And so we've learned a lot about that. Are you seeing this in other areas? I think you mentioned in wildlife and other capacities.
Yeah, do you know what? I live by the sea, down in the southeast of England. And it's quite a busy seaside town. We have lots of people coming down for holidays and things like that. But within a month of lockdown happening, I started noticing buzzards flying over my back garden for the first time ever. So in that time where everything became much, much quieter, there were loads of things that happened. I mean, we had loads more wildflowers on the beach this year too. So there's some really beautiful things that have happened to wildlife, to people, to the way we live our lives. And it's a strange, strange balance that we find as humans. But I love the idea of thinking about athletes, because, of course, one of the things that athletes do is they sit in ice baths, which which is a key component of their recovery. And it seems absurd to loads of us outside, the idea of sitting in a great big bath full of ice. But actually, the cold has some really, really practical effects on our body, and we're all learning to embrace it a bit more, which is what I did in the course of writing the book too.
And the embracing it is what's so difficult, because I guess, you know, when we, I loved one of your terms is you said you walked around as a wolf in the winter, just kind of, you know, observing and paying attention. And as you walk as a wolf in the winter, and really kind of your senses are perked and things are silent, the first appearance is that things are silent. You know, we do. Oh, the bears are sleeping. The bees are, you know, resting. But underneath, there's subnevian terrain of animals and mice and voles and creatures stirring that we don't see, and we probably wouldn't even hear until the fox jumps down into the snow and pulls up a little vermin.
Yeah, and I, you know, those times when we're wolf-like is when we're so lean and hungry and we're cut down to the very basics of existence. And those times tell us a lot about who we are and what we want and what we need, I think. So in the course of researching the book, I had the amazing opportunity to visit a conservatory where they were looking after hibernating dormice. So in the UK, dormice are a very threatened species. There's very few of them left, but we love them. We want to keep them. And so this animal sanctuary picks up dislocated dormice, you know, dormice that have been accidentally dug up, for example, and supports their hibernation. But they get them out once every 6 weeks to check that they're still okay. So I managed to attend this sort of almost ritual of unpacking the dormice. And what astounded me, which I never knew before about hibernation, is that the dormice were almost ice cold. They were 4 degrees. Their bodies were absolutely freezing. But as you held them, they were still squishy. And part of the process of hibernation is that they are burning as little fat as they possibly can. They're paring themselves back into their most efficient state. And so they go as cold as that so that they're not burning hardly any energy at all. And that's how they survive right the way through till May when they finally wake up. And I had to really go home and think about what that meant to me, because what life means in winter is so different to what it means in other seasons. And in our, like, if we're not talking about actual winters, like if we're talking about winter rings, which can easily happen midsummer, we are paring ourselves back as far as those wolves have to and as far as those dormice do. We're going down to our very, very basic functioning. And within that time, we remake ourselves. Great processes happen, but it doesn't feel great at the time, and it certainly doesn't feel great at the moment.
Catherine, I'm wondering, you mentioned that you're an introvert, and I'm wondering if introverts are better at wintering than extroverts, and that extroverts just need to come into more of a practice of relishing and revering the wintering. I'm an extrovert and I get real cabin fever if I don't go out into the world and see people for a few days. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think this year has been more painful for extroverts than introverts, no doubt. The lack of social opportunity. I've got friends who are extroverts who are clearly crawling the walls. Mm-hmm. I mean, thank goodness this has happened in an era of Zoom and Skype and Facebook and all of those amazing opportunities that we have to talk to each other. And I would say to extroverts, not that I understand you guys at all, because my goodness, it would exhaust me living as you do. But it's okay to seek that social contact however you need it, you know, like, don't deny yourself anything, but do learn to actively rest. I think, although, you know, as an introvert, I get very exhausted by busy social times, I think it happens to everybody to some extent. And I think it's okay to deliberately take a break or a pause in your day or in your week, just to have some time to yourself and to actually learn to be in silence and to give yourself some time to process. I mean, that's where things like doing yoga or meditation can really help, because they give you like a process that you can use in order to have that quiet, reflective time. I think that can help bridge it for the people that find it hard to do.
I want to go back to dormice, because that was a word I had never seen that word before. I'd had no idea what it was. And I looked it up. And while I was reading about mice, I mean, they're not exactly mice, because they sort of can live in trees. Is that right? Yeah. And then they can also be edible. I read something about protection of dormice, of edible dormice. And I thought,
let's unpack the whole dormouse thing. So they look a little bit like a hamster with a tail. And they're small and kind of yellowish, maybe. They're like the cutest thing you've ever seen. They tend to live in hedgerows rather than trees, but they often nest around the roots of trees. And so they kind of get dug up sometimes by dogs or by people ploughing fields. There is a species of dormouse called an edible dormouse, and that's because in Tudor times they were seen as quite a delicacy. We don't eat them anymore, just to be really clear. We absolutely don't eat dormice.
Good to know.
But We could, and we should.
There's not many of them left.
No. One of the things I really loved about your book is how you structured it. You have it in months, as if we should and we will open it and enjoy it. We've got to go backwards a little bit to October, but you have it set for each month, and that way I don't feel any pressure to read your book in winter myself and get the whole thing done before January 1. Why did you choose to do that?
I think I wanted to show how there's like a beginning, a middle, and end to wintering. It's a process of going in, and that going out is quite slow as well. I wanted that real feeling of traveling through the seasons. But I also wanted the book to be almost like an almanac of the year, to kind of track those key moments of our year. So, you know, I travel through Halloween. I mean, in the UK, we have fireworks night just after Halloween as well, which I don't think you guys have. But of course, you have Thanksgiving coming up instead. And then into the kind of Advent season, I attended a very beautiful Santa Lucia service in the Swedish church in London, where the girls walk down the aisle with burning candles on their heads. Absolutely extraordinary. And then in midwinter, I visited Stonehenge, where various different pagan groups all assemble to watch the sunrise at the end of the shortest day. And then through into the new year towards Easter. So I just wanted to track the year, really. And in doing that, I tracked the natural world too. So moved through autumn into the season of bare trees and then back out again to the first kind of flowers coming up, spring flowers. So in a lot of ways, it's a very handy way to shape a story because we all know exactly the shape of it. But also it let me travel and let me think about the midwinter as our very lowest point and the way that we gradually thaw out again towards the spring.
As I was looking through the book and enjoying it, I really kind of visualized myself also doing some of those things and wishful thinking and hoping. But I almost wanted in your book to have a few pages to make my own notes, to make my own observations and my own kind of emotional connections and thoughts. Feedback.
Interesting. Okay. Well, in fact, you know what? Lots of UK readers have said that they'd love it as a workbook, like a wintering workbook that they could do little kind of activities and projects. So maybe next year, perhaps I'll mention that to the publisher. I think that's quite good feedback, really.
I don't know. In America, it would become a class. It would become so structured. And
funnily enough, I do run online classes on wintering for writers, not for the general population, but I do run a class that helps writers to work through because like loads of stuff happens to writers. You know, we don't have a very fun time of it. You know, you can get rejected, people's careers collapse, they get writer's block, they lose their networks, all of that kind of thing. And so we do the working through wintering that way, but perhaps I need to do one for regular people too.
Well, and that brings up an interesting concept, you know, whether you're a writer or business or, you know, are we able to incorporate this concept of wintering? I think Europe does this a little bit better when many take off like a full month of August. But I know for me and the team that I have here, that the Christian Center in Park City, where we do a lot of philanthropic work, we're actually discussing as a team, how do we just kind of reset and get ready for potentially a really intense January, February with the number of evictions and COVID again uptakes. What advice would you give, and how would this book apply to businesses that are 24/7?
I mean, I really think that we all need to learn to build into the structure of our days and weeks periods, not just of rest, but of reflection as well. And I think that's so true this year because there are so many people doing such heroic work and loads of different levels. I mean, not just businesses, but also people in the emergency services, in the public sector. I know, you know, there was a survey in the UK today that said how exhausted our teachers are because they've been spending the whole year trying to figure out how to deliver education to, you know, children who are often very anxious and upset themselves. I mean, I know my dad used to live and work in America, and I know how little rest time you guys get compared to us. We definitely have more time like that. And I think that we are actually heading in your direction rather than the other way, if anything. We're all working more and more and harder. And I think we need to learn that that doesn't necessarily make us as productive as we could be. I think there's a huge value to making sure we are restored and rested. And I would love personally to see more businesses start to acknowledge rest in their company values, actually, to start to acknowledge the power of coming up for air sometimes, not just keep doing, but actually consciously restoring yourself and consciously just taking a little more time to reflect, because that is so useful in so many ways. But I think particularly this year, we all need some space. And I hope that people be able to use holiday time to just get a little bit of air around them, really.
Catherine, this has been such a wonderful conversation. I think for a lot of us, my favorite day of the year is the winter solstice, because I know that tomorrow is going to be longer or more minutes of light. And equally, the summer solstice is my day of mourning, because that means tomorrow is going to be shorter. And I love what you give us here, because it gives me hope to be able to embrace the darkness and winter and have it feel okay. It's a great gift. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to help.
The book is Wintering: The Power of Rest and Retreat in Difficult Times. Our guest is Catherine May. And what a nice conversation. Thanks again, and best to you. I was going to say happy Thanksgiving, but it just doesn't work.
Happy day of gratitude.
Yes, there we go. All right. Take care, Catherine.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcasts, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.